Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome again to Higher Consciousness. As always, I am so honored to have this opportunity to connect with you this evening. My name is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am the host and creator of the show, Higher Consciousness. And for those listeners who are new, I always give background information about myself. Currently, I teach psychology at colleges, have a private counseling practice. I am a certified Reiki master, energy medicine practitioner, certified metaphysician, author, life coach, and aromatherapist living in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, more specifically Stone Mountain, Georgia. Now, the reason for my developing the show is I wanted to have a forum for discussions about metaphysics, spirituality, holistic psychotherapy, holistic health, holistic nutrition, divine relationships, the law of attraction, divine prosperity, politics, spiritual concepts, and universal laws. And shows, some of my shows will have guests as the show tonight. We have two wonderful guests, and these guests would talk about the topics that I just mentioned, as well as other topics. Now, Higher Consciousness is a two-hour show that will allow listeners to delve into topics at a higher vibrational level. The only ground rule is that everyone gives respect when expressing opinions. This rule automatically raises your vibrational level so that you can receive respect as well. So, without further delay, I am going to introduce tonight's topic. Our first guest would come on at 7:30, and our second guest would come on at 8. But tonight's topic is Islam and Motherhood. Our guests will be Sister Mary Salam and Dr. Adrian Sabir. For those of you who are listening via computer and want to talk with our guest, you would dial 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. And for those who want to use the internet, type in http://tobtr.com/s/48351107. Again, for internet, for phone users, rather, who would like to listen via the internet, you would just type in http://tobtr.com/s/48351107. Internet users, you would still have to call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1 to join the discussion, and only one call at a time. Again, this is Higher Consciousness, and I am Professor Jamila Franklin, and my purpose for the show is to connect with you on a heart-to-heart and soul-to-soul level. This is not a show for intellectual debates. Instead, this show is dedicated to those who truly want to learn and to grow spiritually and to heal. And last week, we discussed the joys of motherhood. For the entire month of May, I'm dedicating it to mothers, biological mothers, spiritual mothers. And we had 8 live listens, which means we had 8 people listening at the time the show was recorded via computer, and 7 callers. However, since last week, we have had 867 downloads, which means 867 people have downloaded and are continuing to download the Higher Consciousness program in 1 week. And that's when we pick up most of our listening audience, because people can listen to the show at different times of the day or night, and this is worldwide. It's internet-based, so it's around the world. And I'm so very thankful to each of you, as I always state each week. Since October 22nd, 2012, which was the first day that we aired the show, we have had 27,518 listens, which includes the live calls. Again, we've had 27,518 listens, and this is only in 7 months. So remember, if you can't join us live, go to the website, and you can hear all of the shows which are archived. Last week, we discussed the ways to maintain your identity as a stay-at-home mom and the importance of this role. And our guests last week were Charlotte Bailey and Pam Brooks Crump. Now, Charlotte is a stay-at-home mom residing in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and she has previously worked for several major insurance carriers, traveling the Southeast region as a risk manager. And after being torn between work life and the demands of home, Charlotte resigned in 2012 to devote herself to her family and to herself. Charlotte has been married for 10 years and has 2 children ages 6 and 9, and she graduated from Georgia State University with degrees in finance and risk management and insurance. And Charlotte is currently pursuing her master's degree in construction management from Southern Polytechnic University. She plans to remain a homemaker until her studies are completed. And Charlotte is a free spirit who believes in the philosophies live and let live and love without limits. So she was our wonderful first guest, and our second guest last week was Pamela Brooks Crump. And she considers herself to have been a gatherer of people since the 5th grade. And Pam's passion began after a fellow 5th grade classmate asked her, "What are you so shy about? Just tell them what your ideas are and what you want to do." That statement was a turning point in Pam's life. And at that young age, Pam realized if she wanted to bring people together, that she would have to address some of the fears that were stopping her from being her authentic self. And this attitude led her to explore the world and to have fun in the pursuit of meeting wonderful people. And after Pam received her MBA from the Thunderbird School of International Management in Glendale, Arizona, Pam traveled abroad and perfected her French and Spanish. And in Mexico, she met her husband, to whom she has been married for 26 years, and they have 3 children. And Pam is also she was a stay-at-home mom throughout her raising her 3 children. She said initially she thought that when she was pregnant with her first child that she would probably want to go back to work, but during her pregnancy something shifted within her and she decided that she wanted to stay at home and be a stay-at-home mom, and later on she decided to become an entrepreneur as well. So today Pam still considers herself a gatherer of amazing beings. And this philosophy and passion led to her founding the organization We Can, Women Entrepreneurs Collaborating and Networking. And Pam is also a certified happiness coach, Robert Holden, PhD, happiness guru, and founder of the 20-year project Happiness in England is her mentor. And Pam is also the author and illustrator of the Ageless Picture Book, entitled Mia Inspired, A Caterpillar at a Crossroads. So both of these phenomenal women had a very, very enlightened, they had people really engaged in a very enlightened kind of discussion about their backgrounds and their decisions to be stay-at-home moms and how they did not lose their identity because they chose to be stay-at-home moms. Because being a mom, stay-at-home mom, is a career. Unlike what some people may think, it is a full-time career. And both of these ladies were very privileged and blessed that their husbands were very supportive of them and allowed them the opportunity to stay at home. And Pam, in addition to that, has founded several organizations, and she has her own business as well. Now, tonight's topic is Islam and Motherhood. And again, tonight's guests will be Sister Mary Salam, who will join us at 7:30, and Dr. Adrian Sabir. And before I bring Sister Mary on at 7:30, I wanted to just give some background information about mothers in Islam, because as you know, every time I have a show, I like to give people historical information and factual information. And I'm going to do the best that I can in terms of the pronunciation of some of the words in Islam. Since I am not Islamic, I'm going to do my best. And if I mispronounce some of the words, I am asking for everyone's forgiveness prior to that happening. Anyway, what does Islam have to say about mothers? Ansar al-Adil wrote this article. This is one of the most convincing things about Islam, the treatment of women in general, and especially the high position mothers hold in Islam. Amongst the clearest examples of Islam's honoring women is the great status of the mother in Islam. Islam commands kindness, respect, and obedience to parents, and specifically emphasizes and gives preference to the mother, as shall be shown in this article. Islam raises parents to a status greater than that found in most ideologies. The command to be good to one's parents begins right from the Quran. Allah, which is the name in Islam for God, says, "Worship God and join not any partners with him. And be kind to your parents." Noble Quran 4:36. That's similar to chapter 4 in the Bible and verse 36. The mention of servitude to parents follows immediately after servitude to God. This is repeated throughout the Quran. So in the beginning, I'm going to talk about the respect that children are to pay to both parents, and then it gets more specific about the mother. "Your Lord has decreed that you worship none but him and that you be kind to parents. Whether one or both of them attain old age in your life, say not to them a word of contempt nor repel them, but address them in terms of honor. And out of kindness, lower to them the wing of humility and say, 'My Lord, bestow on them your mercy, even as they cherished me in childhood.'" Noble Quran 17:23-24. And the great scholar Abu al-Faraj ibn al-Jawazi, who died in 1201 Common Era, explained, "To be kind to one's parents is to obey them. When they order you to do something, unless it is something which Allah has forbidden, to give priority to their orders over voluntary acts of worship, to abstain from that which they forbid you to do, to provide for them, to serve them, to approach them with gentle humility and mercy, not to raise your voice in front of them, nor to fix your glance on them, nor to call them by their names, and to be patient with them." Okay. The Quran emphasizes the great struggles the mother goes through for her child to highlight the need for one to reciprocate their parents' sacrifice for them. And this is quoted from the Quran. "And we have enjoined on man to be good to his parents. In travail upon travail did his mother bear him, and his weaning was over 2 years. Be thankful to me and to your parents. Unto me, Allah is the final destination." Noble Quran 31:14. And the known Sheikh Abdur Rahman As-Saidi, died 1956, says about this verse, "And to your parents," meaning Be kind to your parents. Shower on them love, affection, and piety, both in words and deeds. Treat them with tender humility. Provide for them and never harm them verbally nor physically. Then Allah mentions the reason why we should be kind to our parents. When he says his mother bore him in travail upon travail, that is, the mother bore constant suffering in pain and hardship from the first moment she felt the child moving in her womb to the worst pangs during the time of delivery. And his weaning is for 2 years. That is, during these 2 years, the mother breastfeeds her child and looks after him or her. So after all the years of suffering, hardship, love, and care, could we not at least compensate our mothers for what they have done for us and pay them back their rights? And this is also added to this article. Tafsir al-Karim al-Rahman fi Tafsir al-Kalam al-Manan. The Quran repeats this mention of the struggles of the mother in yet another passage. And we have enjoined upon man to his parents good treatment. His mother carried him with hardship and gave birth to him with hardship. And his gestation and weaning period is 30 months. He grows until when he reaches maturity and reaches the age of 40 years, he says, "My Lord, enable me to be grateful for your favor, which you have bestowed upon me and upon my parents, and to work righteousness of which you will approve, and make righteous for me my offspring. Indeed, I have repented to you, and indeed I am of the Muslims." Noble Quran 46:15. In connection to this passage, the late Grand Mufti of Pakistan, Sheikh Mohammed Shafi, who died in 1876, wrote, "Mother has more rights than father. Although the first part of this verse is a command to do good to both the parents, the second sentence refers only to the hardships suffered by the mother, because they are unavoidable, and no child can be born without them. Every mother has to go through the problems of pregnancy and severe pains of delivery. As against this, it is not necessary for a father that he suffers any hardship in bringing up and educating the child, if he can afford to pay somebody else for these services. This is why the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, has given more rights to the mother than anybody else. According to a hadith, he has said, 'Do good to and serve your mother, then your mother, then your mother, then your father, then the near relatives, and then those who come after them.'" Mashari. And another verse from the Quran. "And his caring and his weaning is in 30 months." Noble Quran 46:15. This sentence too describes the hardship suffered by the mother for her baby. It points out that even after suffering hardships during pregnancy and the severe labor pains, the mother does not get respite from toils, because the natural food of the infant is her breast, and she has to suckle them. Shafi Maharifal Quran, this is the English translation, volume 7, pages 795 through 796. The Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, continually used to remind his followers of the status of the mother and the obligation of being good to one's parents. The following narration is a beautiful example of the noble position of the mother. A man came to the Prophet and said, "O Messenger of Allah, who from amongst mankind warrants the best companionship from me?" He replied, "Your mother." The man asked, "Then who?" So he replied, "Your mother." The man then asked, "Then who?" So the Prophet replied again, "Your mother." The man then asked, "Then who?" So he replied, "Then your father." And this is by Sahih Bukhari 5971 and Sahih Muslim 72. Commenting on this hadith, Sheikh Muhammad Ali Al Hashimi notes, this hadith confirms that the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him, gave precedence to kind treatment of one's mother over kind treatment of one's father. It's quoted from Al-Hashimi Ta'idul Muslima, IIPH, 2005, page 165. Likewise, the late Grand Mufti of Saudi Arabia, Sheikh Abdul Aziz Ibn Baz, died in 1999, comments on this hadith saying, so this necessitates that the mother is given three times the like of kindness and good treatment than the father. He also writes, the secret of her importance lies in the tremendous burden and responsibility that is placed upon her and the difficulties that she has to shoulder. Responsibilities and difficulties, some of which not even a man bears. This is why, from the most important obligations upon a person, is to show gratitude to the mother and kindness and good companionship with her. And in this matter, she is to be given precedence over and above the father. And I have no doubt that my mother, may Allah shower his mercy upon her, had a tremendous effect upon me and encouraging me to study, and she assisted me in it. May Allah greatly increase her reward and reward her with the best of rewards for what she did for me. And this is quoted from Majmu Fatwa wa Makalat Matanawa. And the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, also said in a famous narration, paradise lies at the feet of your mother. What can be greater evidence of honoring women than this? Islam has effectively placed the ultimate reward for human beings in their devotion to their mothers. Sheikh Ibrahim Ibn Salih al-Mahmud writes, treat your mother with the best companionship, then your father, because paradise is under the mother's feet. Never disobey your parents, nor make them angry. Otherwise, you will live a miserable life in this world and the hereafter. And your children will treat you likewise. Ask your parents gently if you need something. Always thank them if they give it to you, and excuse them if they do not, and never insist on a matter if they refuse to give you something. And this is from Al-Mahmud, How to Be Kind to Your Parents, in his book, page 40. And it is related from Talha ibn Mawaiya As-Salami, who said, I came to the Prophet and said, O Messenger of Allah, I want to perform jihad in the way of Allah. He asked, is your mother alive? I replied, yes. The Prophet then said, cling to her feet, because paradise is there. Sheikh Needham Sakijiya comments, cling to her feet means to submit yourself to her, be close to her, protect her, serve her, because in this is paradise, and with her satisfaction, you will enjoy the good blessings of Allah. And this is taken from Sakijiha, Honoring the Parents, page 52. The Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, showed us the importance of serving one's parents in the following narration reported by Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. I asked the Prophet, O Messenger of Allah, what is the best deed? He replied, prayer offered on time. I asked, what is next in goodness? He replied, to be dutiful and kind to one's parents. I further asked, what is next in goodness? He replied, jihad in the Allah's cause. just as the prophet said that kindness to one's parents was of the best deeds, he also said that disobedience to them was among the major sins. The greatest sins, this is quoted, the greatest sins are to associate partners in worship with Allah, to be undutiful or unkind to one's parents, to kill a soul forbidden by Allah, and to bear false witness. And this is quoted from a book by Sahih Bukhari. Even after Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, the Muslim scholars continue to stress the importance of being dutiful to one's mother. By examining the conduct and teachings of the early Muslim scholars, one may see how the direct recipients of the Islamic message understood the command to be dutiful to one's parents. Their behavior towards their parents shows Muslims how one is to implement the teachings of the Prophet on honoring parents. Abdullah ibn Abbas, who died in 687 CE, a companion of the Prophet and a great scholar of Islam, considered kind treatment of one's mother to be the best deed for strengthening or rectifying one's relation with God. He said, "I know of no other deed that brings people closer to Allah than kind treatment and respect towards one's mother." An even more powerful example of this, and that was the end of quote, an even more powerful example of this is found in the statement of another one of the Prophet's companions, Abdullah ibn Umar, who died in 692 CE, who was also a scholar of Islam. He has been related as stating that Abdullah ibn Umar said, saw a Yemeni man performing tawaf, which is circumambulating the Kaaba while carrying his mother on his back. This man said to Abdullah ibn Umar, "I am like a tame camel for her. I have carried her more than she carried me. Do you think I have paid her back, O ibn Umar?" Abdullah ibn Umar replied, "No, not even one contraction." And this is quoted from Adab al-Mufrad Bakari. Subhan Allah, glory be to God. The efforts of a man who carries his mother on his back while performing tawaf cannot even repay his mother for a single contraction that she went through for him. Wise indeed was Ibn Umar's reply to this man to show him how massively indebted he was to his mother. This is the tremendous value and prestigious position of mothers in Islam. Yet another example is found in the following prophecy of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. "There will come to you with reinforcements from Yemen a man called Uways ibn Amir of the clan of Murad from the tribe of Karan. He had leprosy, but has been cured of it except for a spot the size of a coin. He has a mother, and he has always treated her with kindness and respect. If he prays to Allah, Allah will fulfill his wish. If you can ask him to pray for forgiveness for you, then do so." And this is quoted from Sahih Muslim 1695. Indeed, later on, Umar ibn al-Khattab met Uways, who was exactly as the Prophet described. And upon Umar's request, Uways prayed for him. Commenting on this narration, Sheikh Muhammad Ali al-Hashimi writes, "What a high status Uways reached by virtue of his kindness and respect towards his mother, so that the Prophet recommended his Sahaba companions to seek him out and ask him to pray for them." All of this indicates the high status to which Islam has raised the position of motherhood and given the mother precedence over the father. At the same time, Islam has given importance to both parents and has enjoined kindness and respect to both. And this is quoted from a book by Al-Hashimi, The Ideal Muslimah, IIPH, 2000, the year 2005, page 167. So great was the Islamic emphasis on parents that the Muslims considered a great opportunity to attain paradise in service to one's mother. Iyas ibn Muawiyah was a famous Islamic scholar from the second generation of Muslims. When his mother died, Iyas ibn Muawiyah cried. He was asked, "Why did you cry?" He said, "I used to have two gates open to paradise. Now one of them is closed." Zayn al-Abidin, who died in 713 CE, was the great-grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, and also a renowned scholar. He used to treat his mother with so much kindness and love, as seen in the following narration. Once he was asked, "You are the most kind person to his mother, yet we have never seen you eating with her from a single dish." He replied, "I fear that my hand would take what her eyes have already seen in the dish, and then I would be disobeying her." In other words, he was so careful not to disobey his mother that he would even avoid eating out of the same plate as her. He thought that she would see a morsel and intend to take it, but before she did, he might unknowingly take the same morsel and eat it. This is how careful he was to obey his mother in the most minute details. And another early Islamic scholar, Sa'id ibn Masayib, who died in 709 CE, was asked about the meaning of the verse, but addressed them in terms of honor. Sa'id stated, "It means that you should address them as a servant addresses his master." And Muhammad ibn Sirin died in 729 CE, used to speak to his mother in a very soft voice, out of respect to her. He was often seen in the company of his mother and looking after her. All that has preceded shows how the status of mothers, and consequently that of women, is elevated to the highest position in Islam. The honor Islam has given to mothers is beyond that of most ideologies. And this is clear proof of the lofty status of Muslim women. Okay? So, now, after this commercial break, I will bring on the first guest, who is Sister Mary Muhammad. Stay tuned.
This is Professor Jamila Franklin, CEO and President of Oyende Enterprises, a holistic wellness company. We provide dynamic certified Reiki and energy medicine classes and trainings, certified aromatherapy courses, metaphysics courses, life coaching sessions, and private holistic counseling sessions. For more information, call 770-808-8051 or go to our website at www.oyendeenterprises.com. That is spelled OYINDEENTERPRISES.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome back. This is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am so honored this evening to have these two wonderful women talk to us about Islam and motherhood. I just gave a very detailed narration regarding how Islam reveres women, and I think it's very important for those people who are not familiar with Islam, because there are a lot of stereotypes in this country regarding Islam. So I wanted to refute and dispel those stereotypes. Now, the first guest this evening is a near and dear friend, and her name is Sister Mary Salam. Mary Salam is a woman who demonstrates a profound love for God and compassion for people. A native of Noonan, Georgia, Mary Salam is a 76-year-old retired licensed practical nurse, certified Reiki master and foot detox specialist, and reflexologist. She enjoys reading, bowling, and yoga. Marisalam was brought up in the Christian faith and converted to Islam in 1975. She exemplifies a Muslim woman and lends herself to the work of uplifting the kingdom of Allah, which is the other name for God. Marisalam is a very instrumental part of the Muslim community here in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area. Currently, Marisalam is the chairperson for the Atlanta Masjid Health Services team, a board member of Beyond the Bell, serves as chaplain for the Love and Courage organization, a member of the Interfaith Outreach Program, and an honorary member of Sisters United in Human Services. Her motto is, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." Sister Marisalam is a widow with 5 children whose names are Robert, Diane, Deborah, Mary, and Renee. One of her daughters returned to Allah at the age of 5. So the total number of children that she has given birth to is 6. She has 16 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. In addition to her own family, Marisalam is looked upon as a mother to many around the Muslim community as they seek out her wisdom and kindness. In reference to motherhood, there is a saying of the Prophet that paradise lay at the feet of the mother. And I just gave a lot of information about that. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on Sister Marisalam, who's also been a calling guest on my show in the past. Greetings, Sister Marisalam. How are you?
I'm fine. And blessings to you, and peace and blessing to your audience listeners. I am pleased that you asked that I be on your show.
Well, I'm so pleased and honored that you found the time, because listening audience, I told her I'm going to have to put a lock and key on her, because this lady is busier than I am. I can't keep up with her. She is so active, and I have adopted her as one of my elder mentors, so I always try to keep tabs on her. But anyway, I wanted to have you talk about how you, as a Muslim woman, because your children were older when you converted to Islam, but how you've used Islamic principles in your life and also in talking with your children, and has anyone in your family other than yourself converted to Islam?
I just think a lot that just being a mother has been a great joy for me, and it still is. I enjoyed my children when they were small, and I continue to enjoy them today. But when you was talking about Islam and motherhood, mm-hmm. I just wanted to look at the word motherhood, because you know words form the mind, mm-hmm. and words form people, and everything comes from a word.
Exactly.
That's why we have to be very particular of words that we say, and I was very careful of the words that I spoke to my children when they were small. Mm-hmm. I never called them out of their name, you know, because, like I said, that words form the mind. So if you look at the word mother, you want to look at the root word for mother, which is mom, meaning to bring forth. Mm-hmm. So the Creator has blessed the female to bring forth life. And that is so wonderful.
That's very true. Mm-hmm.
And that's why women should be held in high esteem, because Almighty God has given them that right. And, mm-hmm. and the male is just an agent, you know, one that helped in producing the child. But the mother, oh, we just don't know how great mothers are. And mm-hmm. if you look at the word again as mother. The Arabic word for mother is Umm, meaning a source, a principle of origin. So from the word Umm, you have Ummatun, meaning a nation or community. And that is why the prophet says, one of the saying, that paradise abides the feet of the mother, because she brings forth life and she is the first teacher of mankind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Others have a great responsibility. Women just, I mean, I'm just going to say women and men do not know the great responsibility that the woman have. And it's so sad today that we don't have mothers that know how to be mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have the knowledge of being a mother. And I'm so thankful for my grandmother for being a part of my rearing in my life, because she taught me so many principles of life. And my children will tell you today that I passed it on to them. They used to always say, "Oh, your sister, tell me what your grandmama said," you know. So, you know, I just thank Almighty God, you know, for being a mother. And then, like I was saying, we want to look at the word hood. Hood means to protect or having a covering. You know, there was a time when your children were small and they be going out the door, and it was cold or raining or whatever, you would always say, you better put a hat or pull that hood on your head. You know, they was always protective of the children. And mothers, that's what mothers do. You know, they try to do everything, good mothers now, you know. Everybody that bear a child is not able to be a mother.
That's very true.
We have women that haven't ever had to bear children or wasn't blessed to bear children, but they still mothers, you know. So mothers are very protective. That's in their innate nature, you know, to nourish the child, to bring up the child in the way that it should go. Because we know that the environment shapes, you know, shapes our children. So that's why I said, look at the word motherhood. Then from motherhood, you got parenthood. You know, I was a single parent. I raised my children by myself. But Almighty God was always there to help me, to assist me, and brought people to my aid, you know. So I was just very blessed to be able to rear my children. I look back, maybe there's some things I could have done better, but with the limited knowledge that I had, I did what I knew best. Because we know that knowledge is power, and power is knowledge. But there's sometimes you can look back and say, well, you know, I think I could have did that way. I could have did that way. But I always tell people, my children's not the best and they're not the worst. But I thank God that they grew up loving each other. I know for a fact that they love me. You know, so
they do.
Anything that would come about right now about me, I wouldn't have to worry about my children taking care of me, because they knew that I took care of them when they were small, tried to give them the best. It was the best that I had, you know. So it's truly been a great journey, you know, in a mother. So it's a big responsibility. And it really grieves my heart to see young people today, because they don't have those grandmothers and those aunts that can tell them what to do and how to do it, because society is shaping our children. You try to tell them the best of what to do and how to do, but the society has so much influence on our children, you know. So I'm taking it upon myself, you know, to tell my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren the knowledge that I have acquired over the years. So it's going to be up to them whether they take this knowledge and use it for the best of their ability. But I don't want it to be on my hands that says that I didn't tell them. you know.
Right.
Yes, but that was the Prophet Muhammad, may the peace and blessing be upon him, when Almighty God gave him the revelation. He said that he didn't reveal this, the knowledge and the revelation, to him to be a ward over the people. All he had to do just warn them. No, because Almighty God has all of us a choice. So we have a choice in this life to do what's right or to do what's wrong. And my choice is to try to do the best that I can. That's why I like that motto about do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. That's the motto that my grandmother gave me years ago. And I still try to live by that, you know. So it's truly been a blessing. And I truly want to say I am so grateful that you had having me on with Dr. Adrian.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Because believe it or not, Sister Adrian was a midwife at the time that one of my grandchildren was born 22 years ago. So she delivered one of my grandchildren by the name of Khadija. So and I will never forget her, you know, because she is just like in the family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's truly a blessing, you know.
I'm so honored that you were able to be a guest on the show, and I wanted to have you give information about how you raised your children, even though, like I said, you converted to Islam when most of them were older. Still, they're common principles, and that's what a lot of people don't understand, because Islam, Judaism, and Christianity are all Abrahamic religions. So they have some similarities in terms of the early foundations, and a lot of people don't know that nor understand that. And then later on, that's where the differences appear. But in terms of the beginning, if you look at the different religious texts, you will see similarities because they're coming from the same source. So I wanted to really have you have this opportunity to share with people your pearls of wisdom, because I think that you're just a phenomenal person, and you are a wonderful role model and mentor. I look to you and listen to you for a lot of the insight, because I know that you know, and I don't question that, and I feel so honored to have this opportunity to have you be a guest on my show. So
yeah,
I was.
Oh yes, and you were talking about my children. They was out of age when I came and accepted religion for Islam. Even though that I did convert to or revert to Islam, because Islam really just, the word really just means peace, and Islam has been from the foundation of the world, and all prophets that came before, they all were trying to bring peace in the world. All of them came with the same message, to serve the Creator, and to do that, we have to have peace within ourselves, because you can't have peace with someone else until you have peace within.
Exactly.
And when I accepted Al-Islam, two of my children came along when they had the Nation of Islam. But they've never just really practiced the way I practice, but I still know that they are believers. That's the main thing. I don't like to dwell on labels.
Right.
No, because it's what's in your heart that counts.
Right.
The label doesn't mean anything. It's just like I tell people all the time, you can put any type of label on a jar. If you put it on a ketchup jar, that doesn't say it's ketchup in there. It might be mustard in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So you don't deal with the label. You deal with the contents. So I've tried to live a good life before my children, you know. And what they can see, the light that I try to set for them to follow. I've never tried to force them to practice like I practice. All I want them to do is have respect for me and be the best that they can be. You know, that's mm-hmm. all I ask. To have respect for me and to be the best that they can be. Because I'm not the one that's going to judge them, the creator, mm-hmm. the judge. So what I have to do is just try to set a good example for them to see, oh, that's a better way to live in this society than what you see around you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like I said, when my children were small, I used to play with them, you know, we play house, cut out paper dolls. And that's one thing I say about parents, spend time with your children when they're small, you know, do things with them. And let mm-hmm. them know that you trust them. I think that's one of the things that I think I did for my children, to let them know that I did trust them. So they knew their limits or their boundaries, you know, of doing what they had to do. Because I used to always tell them that was one place, that there is one place that I would never go to visit them, and that was in the jailhouse. Because
wow.
I told them, you know, what to do and how to do it and what would happen if they did certain things, you know. So I
wow.
want to think that I never did have to take that visit to see them behind bars into things that they didn't have any business dwelling in, you know. And I truly think Almighty God for my son, because you know how it is with sons and you having little young men growing up. Usually parents have more problems sometimes, I think, with the sons than they do with the daughters, and may be kind of equal.
Mm-hmm.
But I truly, 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 truly thank Almighty God for my son, you know, because he never gave me any trouble. He spent a lot of time with my grandmother. No, I'm sorry, excuse me, my mother. But I have never had any problems with him. And he's 61 years old today.
Wow.
As, you know, January, he was 61. You know, so I just look back on his life and see how he carried himself all through the years. And I look back on my young girls. I children did like children did, but they had to have a life as a child. But I just thank God they grew up to be wonderful women today, you know, and we're close, and I thank God for that we're close. We can call and talk to each other, you know, and they know they can discuss things with me, you know, because I'm always seeing that when I get my Mother's Day cards, my birthday
mm-hmm.
cards, and when I read those cards, and all I can say is alhamdulillah, that means all praise is due to the Creator. So I tell parents to love your children, show them love, you know, because that's what it's all about. If we had more love in this society, it would be a better place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People are all about self, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if the mothers could see the importance of being mothers, our young girls, if they could see the importance of growing up to be respectful young women, you know, and not give away their power. When you
exactly.
give away your power, yes, when you give away your power, these young men or these young guys, they think they can do what they want to, you know, how they making these songs, calling out with young ladies all types of names, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if they could just really see how precious they are, that Almighty God has given them something that's so precious, you know, and raise them to high esteem, to be the one that bring forth life for this society, you know,
mm-hmm.
because the man can't have no baby.
Right.
You know?
Right.
No. Cannot have a
right.
child. So we just should be so grateful, so grateful. I know I'm grateful.
Yeah, and I am so grateful too. I think what you hit upon several very important points. I think one of it is self-esteem in terms of young women as well as young men. I'm going to have the month of June dedicated to fathers because they're very important as well. But as they say in Islam, men cannot carry the baby, and the one contraction that the mother has, there's nothing that a man can do to compare to that one contraction. So the way in which women are elevated in Islam is so wonderful. And I think women nowadays, young women, like you said earlier, is that they're given all these false images about who they are. Like I teach psychology at different colleges, and what I've said to women is, it's interesting because this society now sees the power of women and how can you best put her back in her place and have her be submissive. You start out having these reality shows that show her as not being able to get along with other women. And when women tell me that, I find it very interesting. I don't trust women. I said, but aren't you a female? Well, yeah. Well, should I not trust you? No, I'm different. I said, well, how are you different than other women that you're condemning? I said, because you've been programmed to not trust women, because if women then came together, a lot of the things that society would try to do, they couldn't do. All of the indiscretions within relationships with men, if women band together, there would be none of that. But as long as we can have women not trusting each other, not emulating the positive values of their mothers, not respecting their mothers, they then repeat old patterns because they're not at the feet of their mother learning from them. And so the reality shows now, because I don't watch television that much, but when I do some talent searching just so I could have current topics to talk to my college students, you know, I've seen women spitting on each other, you know, like those housewife shows, the Housewives of Beverly Hills. So it has nothing to do with race or income. These are wealthy women, the Housewives of Orange County, the Housewives of New Jersey. These women have money, and they act as if the stereotypic version of poor women. They act the same way because they've been conditioned to treat and mistreat each other that way. And usually the common denominator for them not getting along is some jealousy regarding a male. And I find that very disempowering. So I tell people, both men and women, you are the source of your own power. Don't look externally to anyone else to gain your power. And when I see women giving up their power, women my age and older have done that too, and I find it very disheartening because you know, they validate themselves in the context of being in a relationship. So I tell my students, your first relationship is with yourself. I give myself Valentine's Day cards. I take myself out. I give myself surprise birthday parties. You know, and so if a male comes into the picture, he then sees how I value and honor myself. He has to meet that minimum bar or nothing happens. So that's what the information I try to impart with women, because I know of women, it's not just young women, older women who have gotten locked into that cycle of seeing themselves as defined by being in a relationship with someone outside of themselves, primarily with their mate or husband, and sometimes with their children. They can't see themselves independent of all relationships. And what usually happens when you can't see that because you're not placing the God within first nor yourself, something will happen to shift that where you can't be in that kind of relationship because you're defining yourself in the context of being, you know, in a relationship with someone else. And like you said, which is so important, Sister Mary, you have to have the peace within yourself first.
Yes.
And then all those other things would be added onto you, you know, because before we were even mothers, be it biological or spiritual mothers, you were who you are first.
Yes.
So if you can't be at peace with who you are and love you from the from the deepest part of your being, then
do that.
Yeah, if you can't do that, something always happens. And with those women who don't, the husband either dies or leaves them, the children either leave them or they leave them, and then they have to redefine who they are because they've seen themselves in the context of those relationships and have not been able to see themselves as being whole beings. And then when they're forced into it, then they're forced into it. When they're forced to see it, then they said, because a lot of times we don't want to sit with ourselves because we don't know how to love ourselves. We love ourselves in the context of other relationships. And so I think motherhood is phenomenal. And I tell women first, love you first, then become a mother. Because once you love you, then you have a lot to give to the children, because you, your whole being going into a relationship.
Yeah,
so
we would love to change this society overnight, you know, if we only had the knowledge, the understanding of what it's all about. I always hear one of my daughters, Deborah, she's always saying, well, Mom, there's no school to teach you how to be parents, mothers and fathers and marriage relationship. We got all other schools, but they don't have schools for that, you know. So very important that the mother try to find out all she can of how to be a mother, because really our young people don't know how to be mothers, you know.
That's very true.
Because they are children having children, and the society gives them this big head that they don't listen to the elder or the ones that came before them to try to show them that there's a better way, you know. Because sometimes you just hate for them to learn the hard way, but most of them have to learn the hard way. But really, they don't have to if they just only listen and take advice, because this society is not set up to make you good men and women, you know. You can tell that by the TV. All this, all about sex, drugs, and all of that stuff. Life is not all about that, you know?
Exactly. But that's the purpose of my show, Higher Consciousness, is to, because I have no idea who is listening for some of the shows. Some of them I do, because I can see the calls on the board. Like, I see several calls on the board. And sometimes I don't. So in the wee hours of the morning, when people are channel searching Blog Talk Radio, they will pull up my show. And then you never know the seeds that we're planting in someone's spirit and in someone's mind. So they can say, okay, well, I've done it my way, but I do need to go back to the ways of the elders and sit at their feet, because I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to raise these children as a single mother. I don't know how to raise these children as a mother who is married, because some women can be married and it's just the same issue.
Right.
So I don't know how to raise them. So by listening to shows like this show, Higher Consciousness, people are able to listen, know that they're not being judged, call in and ask questions, or listen to the archive shows and just say, oh. And so with that, I want to tell people the number is 1-818-572-8023, and press 1 if you would like to ask a question. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023, and press 1. And tonight's guest that you have just had the wonderful opportunity to listen to is Sister Mary Salaam, and she will remain with us. And after the commercial break, I'm going to bring in Dr. Adrian Sabir. So stay tuned.
Are you stressed, tired, need to relax? Peace Be Still, a natural holistic aromatherapy blend, is your answer. My name is Jacqueline Scott, and I have been a faithful user for years. For more information and to purchase Peace Be Still, a wonderful blend for the entire family, go to Amazon.com or call 770-808-8051 today.
Greetings and welcome back to Higher Consciousness. My name is Professor Jamila Frankman, and this evening we have two wonderful guests. We just finished listening to Sister Mary Salaam, and the next guest that I'm bringing on is Dr. Adrian Sabir. Our topic this evening is Islam and motherhood. Dr. Adrian A. Sabir is a transpersonal spiritual psychologist, educator, metaphysician, certified Reiki master, workshop facilitator, inspirational speaker, and holistic wellness health advocate and practitioner. She's also the mother of 6 children. Her life journey has included assisting with the birth of babies, as Sissy Mary talked about, how Dr. Adrian delivered one of her grandchildren, and educating children and adults of all ages. She has assisted with burial preparations for the deceased females from her faith tradition. She presently assists individuals in goal setting, self-transcendence, and spiritual transformation. Dr. Adrian guides individuals to identify those beliefs, patterns, and programs that control their lives and leads to stress, conflict, addictions, disease, and death. She believes that freedom and full self-realization and authenticity is a natural inheritance that is accessible to all of humanity. Dr. Adrian is the recipient of many awards, recognitions, and certificates. She has served on various boards, and additionally, she has participated as a professional theatrical performer and storyteller, creative designer, businesswoman, and radio and TV host. She was featured in Who's Who in Black Atlanta in 2004, Maynard Jackson edition. She is the author of A Student-Centered Soul Development System, A Transpersonal Approach to Elementary Education. Dr. Adrian closed her practice in Lithonia, Georgia in 2011 to take care of her elder mom in Greensboro, North Carolina. This journey led her to discover several holistic approaches to wellness that have assisted her mother in her recuperation and management of discomfort and dis-ease and the aging process. Dr. Adrian has recently opened up her practice in Greensboro, North Carolina, and looks forward to serving the broader community as a Reiki master and energy practitioner. Additionally, it is her goal to bring to the forefront a closer look at holistic wellness, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Her philosophy is wellness is natural. So, without further ado, I will bring on Dr. Adrian Sabir. Greetings, how are you?
Greetings, Professor Jamila, how are you?
I'm doing very well, very well. It is a pleasure, as always, to have you make a presentation, and specifically, this is your first time to be on my show. So I gave background information about you, as well as motherhood in al-Islam. So I know that you are the mother of 6 children, and you raised all your children up in Islam. Is that correct?
I did, and I want to thank you, first of all, for inviting me to be on your program. I want to greet Sister Mary as well. Assalamu alaikum. And I want to.
Can you speak a little louder?
I said I want to thank you for inviting me to your show.
Uh-huh.
I want to also give a greeting to Sister Mary. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. And as well as give a greeting to your listening audience. And again, just I'm really grateful to be able to be here. And yes, okay. You're saying I raised my children. Can you hear me clearly?
It's a little muffled.
Okay.
Can you hear me clearly now?
Yes, that's a lot better.
Okay. So I was saying I wanted to thank you for inviting
welcome.
Me to the show and to give everyone on your listening blog the greeting as well of peace be unto them. You asked me, did I raise my children? My journey to Islam was really in the late 70s, and I became a mother in the context of Islam. And I didn't have all of the wonderful, and let me applaud you on the information that you gave, because that information is information as I continue to be a Muslim that I learned about in terms of the high regard that the religion had for women, had for mothers. And so as I became a mother, which was about a year after I became a Muslim, then I was learning, I was in a learning process the whole while. And in that learning process, I learned through literally from reading the Quran itself and things on women and things on motherhood that influenced how I raised my children. But like all, many of us who were raised by our mothers, my first teacher was my mother. So I learned how to mother from my mother. And I was blessed and fortunate to have a wonderful mother who was nurturing, who was caring, who did sacrifice, who was an educator, who showed me examples of integrity and all the different virtues that one wants to bring into their own lives. My mother literally was an example of that. So it made it easy for me, as I learned various principles of Islam, to also reflect on that example my mother had set for me as a mother and be able to be what I believe was a effective mother. I stay away from now those terms of was I a good mother, a great mother. There was times when I definitely felt I was a great mother. And just like Sister Mary, there were times when I would have done some things differently. There were times when I may have felt that I was somewhat stoic and not as tender. And so I learned those kind of characteristics as I continued to grow and develop in the religion of Al-Islam. But the religion had a complete impact on how I was as a mother, because as I grew up, I didn't necessarily grow up thinking that I was going to become a Muslim. I was an activist, and I was very much a political activist and somewhat stoic. And then even when I became Muslim, I didn't necessarily come in with the original desire to become Muslim. I really wanted to know more what it was about and why were they just like any other religion, leaving the people, you know, in the wrong direction. But as I went to the different meetings or presentations while I was in college, I realized that I could still be the intellectual person that I was and also be a Muslim. And I realized that it was in my nature. There was a natural thing about this religion of Al-Islam that spoke to my nature, and that's why I could connect it with it. Although I was raised Christian, my mother and I became even closer after I became Muslim. And so it's that, and she and I have kept a close relationship over the years because of the religion of Islam and because of things that you read that said that we are in, instructed by Allah Most High to respect our mothers, to respect our parents. And I promise you that was the what helped me to have even more high regard for my mother and for my father. So I didn't grow up just saying, oh, I'm going to be this mother and this and this and this. But Al-Islam emphasized marriage. Al-Islam emphasized children. And I found that Muslim women had babies, had lots of babies. And for me, when I did have a child, I had medical issues that made bearing children difficult for me. So I almost died having my babies. I had two high-risk pregnancies. After the first pregnancy, my doctor said, you know, you don't need to be having babies. But I was young, and it was like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to have me another baby. And the second pregnancy was even higher risk, and I had to be off my feet for a long period of time just to have that last baby that I had biologically, and my sister had to come and, you know, be with me during that period of time. Now, it was also this religion of Al-Islam that led me to bring into my family structure other children. And so I'm a mother of children that I didn't also have biologically. And I raised six babies, six children, to adulthood. So they are all my children. And I also have been able to have children live with me over the years who refer to me as mom. So motherhood then became very important in my life, and I made a lot of different kinds of sacrifices, because God says in the Quran, Allah says, when I was getting ready to take on these children, is do that which is best for the orphan. And so mm-hmm. I knew at that time I had two children. We had, my husband and I had a good income coming in. I was teaching at a school, and he was in management. So we had a good, stable environment. And so when God said, do that which is best, then I knew that was what was best to do. And so Al-Islam gave me that which I needed to expand my understanding on motherhood and to become a mother to children that I may not have birthed through my womb, but I birthed through my, bringing them up.
Mm-hmm.
So motherhood for me has been loves and joy and excitement and amusement, and I'm a conscious mother. The thing about me and my lifestyle is I am an aware person. I'm a conscious person. I've been that way really since I was a child growing up. So mothering for me led me to spaces of research where I would do some of the things that Sister Mary talked about. You know, we don't have a book. That is true. But we have guidance. A lot that Allah says in our book, this is a book, and it is guidance, sure, without doubt. And so mm-hmm. I used our book to guide how I mothered. So if it said, do not yell from inner apartments, then we try to keep lower voices in the house. When it says, and enter you through the door, proper doors, and I would teach my children how to do that. So I used the information that we had that was available to us in our religion to guide me in how I raised my children. And I would tell my children stories. You saw in my bio that I was a storyteller. I love mm-hmm. stories. So I looked for stories that I could constantly tell my children. So the story, we call it a hadith, which is sayings of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, that you read where it was the man asked them, you know, who should we hold in good company? And he says, mm-hmm. your mother, and then after that, your mother, then after that, your mother, then after that, your mother, and then after that, who, your father. So I would tell my children these kind of stories and other stories that I could find that related to the regardfulness that one must have for God, Allah, the regardfulness one must have for themselves, the regardfulness one must have for their mother, for their father, for the society. We have a saying that says, Ti Allah, Ti Rasul, Ti Umni Amni, obey Allah, obey his messenger, and obey those charged with the authority. So all of that is what I use in raising, you know, my children. And doing that, it allowed them and me to be able to connect in ways that mothers connect, you know, with their children and go through the ups and the downs, the ebbs and the flows, you know, of life. I remember at one point when my children were younger, I took them to see Dr. Maya Angelou. And after she had spoken, my children, I really, really had this whole thing about discipline and children being a certain way. So my children sometimes look like little soldiers. I had one in my arms that was the baby, and the other ones were walking, and you could see them, you know, like walking in a line, going into restaurants. I would expose them to different things because I wanted them to be a certain character in the eyes of the world, that this is how you present yourself. You don't just represent you represent a group of people. So mm-hmm. you conduct yourself a certain way. And I would say to my children, too many of your people have died in the oceans of Atlantic, you know, the Atlantic Ocean. You don't have time to do a lot of playing. You have to look at the generations that came before you and what they suffered, mm-hmm. and we stand on those great shoulders, and you have a responsibility, and that's really how I raised them. So Maya Angelou saw me one time, you know, with my children when we came to see her, and at the end she said to me, she saw me getting ready to go into my car, she was getting ready to get into her limousine. She said, could you come here, ma'am? Could you come here? Could you come here? You know, Dr. Maya Angelou has that throttle voice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I just wanted to tell you that I was so impressed with seeing your children sit there and actually listen to the things that I had to say. I just want to touch each and every one of their heads. And so she touched all six of my children's heads. And it was an affirmation or reaffirming for me that I was doing something right. Now, to some people, that may not mean anything. But for me at that time as a young mother, it meant a lot because she's one of the people that I really respected and regarded. And here she was literally confirming something that I was doing that was beneficial to the society through my children. So that became very important to me. And I always expose my children to lots of different types of situations, to people and books and literature and places and nature and connections and how to make connections. And we know each other well, and I'm a metaphysician. So I would relate things to my children, not only just from the physical things that they saw, but what those things could mean in a spiritual manner or a non-physical manner. So, and I would teach them that to help them to become thinkers, because God calls us to thinking. He says, "O pondering mankind, O mankind who reflects, O mankind who thinks, mankind of understanding." And so I would teach that to my children. You have to be a thinker. You have to contemplate. You have to ponder. You have to reflect. You have to be one of understanding. You have to see those things. And those, and you ask, you know, a question, I'm sure you probably asked me too, what are some things you leave? I want to make sure that the legacy that I leave on the face of this earth is, Lord, bear me witness that I did those things you asked me to do, that I've asked my children to befriend you. I've asked my children to worship you. I asked them to be, you have, keep Al-Islam as their faith base, and to follow the ways of their fathers that came before them, their mother that came before them. And I choose as a gift for them this wonderful religion of Al-Islam. And I say to those who are not Muslim, there's so much in this way of life that can be applied to everybody. It is a way of life. And so as the first teacher of my children, I learned how to be a mother through mothering. See, we are these maiden women, and then we are birthed into motherhood. And so, therefore, we learn how to be better mothers sometimes through being mothers. And then sometimes you learn more of how you could have done things as you your children are older, and you do a better job or can influence them by through the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren. It's almost like God in his mercy gives us an opportunity to do some additional mothering by being able to perhaps give some words of wisdom, wise words to our children about their children. Because my children used to really be so upset. Mom, you let them do a lot more than you allowed us to do. Well, I know better now. There's some things that I can say now to help you to have a more of a situation in your environment that I may did not know, you know, at that time when I was then, you know, raising you. So don't indict me for that. Allow me to grow, you know, as well. So mothering, I had a lot of trials, I had a lot of fears, I had a lot of challenges. And I think it's important for us to say that because mothers, a lot of times I always say, if you show me guilt, I'll show you a woman and I'll show you a mother. Because we tend to, as mothers, feel such high levels of stress. I remember one time that when I was had my daughter, my first child was a girl. And I remember that I was so exhausted as a mother that I put her down in the crib, at the bottom part of the crib. And I remember just so tired and laying down. But then when I got up to get her, I went to the top part of the crib. And I didn't see her at the bottom of the crib. And I was in hysteria, complete hysteria. Where is my baby? Where is my baby? you know, and I can't tell you what that feels like when a mother feels something has happened to her child. You know, that's something God, Allah, puts in us. I know that's not from me. I wouldn't put that kind of terror upon myself, that kind of love, that kind of yearning, that kind of where, you know, wanting, where is my child? And my mother told me a story about myself and her mothering, that when I was an infant, not able to walk, the same type of thing happened to her when they went looking for me at one point in the house, and they had a upper level, a basement level house. And she said they went looking. No one could find me. No one could find me. And someone eventually went down into the basement, into the pantry, and there I was curled in a corner. And to this day, I don't know how I even got there.
Oh, wow.
You know, so here was a mother. And my mother to this day tells me that story, you know. So mothers is what we call, you know, as a psychologist, you know, I look at mothers from a whole other perspective in terms of the archetype of mother, and that mother who can be considered wise, that mother who is protector over her family, the mother who is dedicated to her family, the mother who has security, she's a model for the family. And it's an archetype, and that's why we see that a mother does not have to always be a biological mother. We have the example in our religion, in our holy book, it says that the wives of the prophets are the mothers of the believers, are the mothers of the faithful. And among those wives of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, was a wife that had no children, yet she was called mother. You know, so God shows us through his infinite wisdom that there's an archetype of mother or a symbol of mother that women can also be. So mothers, women become mothers of their projects, mothers of their businesses, mothers of their communities, mothers of their organizational structures. They become mothers to other children who see them, the energy of them, and draw near to the energy of who they are. So for me, I'm one who tries to do what is instructed in the Quran, which is self-mastery. So I literally tried to become a master being a mother. I really did. And I would take classes. I would expose my children to various things. I would expose myself to various information so that I could be better at what it is that I was doing. And I made mistakes. And I think it's important for us to tell that there's a light side and a shadow side to mothering. Langston Hughes made a poem, and a lot of times as a mother come, I would think about this poem. I learned it when I was in school as a young person, but it became part of my experience, you know, as a mother. And he wrote a poem called "Like Mother to Son," and I remember parts of the poem was, "Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time I've been a-climbing and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you finds it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I'm still going, honey. I'm still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair." And I feel that way about motherhood because I've had, and you, again, knowing me personally, I've had some difficult situations with my children, not only as they grew up as children, but even as adults. But I have been able to, by the grace of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, how glorified is he, been able to grow through those experiences as mothers. And so for me now, as I communicate with my children, my sons, my daughters, in terms of their now being mothers and fathers, and when they do reach out, because I've had to learn, stop trying to, you know, always manage people's affairs, but also allow them sometimes to reach out for you, to you, is to tell them the truth of things, both shadow and light. And that perfection is, we seek to perfect things, but the Creator kept perfection for itself. So you do the best that you can, but do your best. Try to master whatever it is that you do. So you're going to have to get both secular knowledge and you're going to have Islamic knowledge. You're going to have to read the Quran from cover to cover because you cannot say of it what you don't know. So you must read it in it as God is sure without doubt. And at the same time, God instructs you to travel. So we must travel the world in various ways. You physically travel it, or you travel through books, or you travel through nature. You look at things. You, Allah Ta'ala says, in the heavens and the earth as well as in yourself are signs of instruction. But many among mankind go on heedless of the signs. So I challenge, and it's not so much a challenge, but I invite people, mothers, fathers, those who are teaching children, I invite us to look at that, the natural way that the Creator has orientated his creation, and then build ourselves pattern upon that. Because when you want to know how to do a thing, go to that which has created it. Allah, God, has created mothers. And he has created us and given us examples through his creation. So he is the best to teach us how to be mothers. And so a lot of my learning, too, comes from my observation of creation itself. I would look at the elephants, and I would see that they are pachyderms, and there was a matriarch there, and she was the one that guided all of those different generations. And I would learn how to become more thick-skinned myself. Mm-hmm. I looked at the eagles and the hawks and how they soared above the ground feeders. And I had to learn how to soar myself. You know, Khalil Gibran, which is somebody I really love, he would say, you know, your children aren't your children. They're the sons and daughters of life longing for itself. They come through you, but they're not from you. And though they are with you, they don't belong to you. And I had to accept that and understand that. I dedicated what was in my womb when I did carry my children. I did the same thing that Miriam did. And she said, oh, Allah, I dedicate that which is in my womb to you and your service. I did the same thing. And I did the best that I could in raising them, but I dedicated them to the Creator, that which created them, because I didn't own my children. I think that's a mistake we make. Because we sometimes think we own our children, but we don't. The Creator birthed us into motherhood. And so, therefore, we look to the Creator for our answers. We look to him for our solace. We look to him for our comfort. He gave comfort. Two mothers are mentioned in our holy book, and it's many mothers that are mentioned in the Bible as well, and I believe in the scriptures, all of them. But in the Holy Quran, two mothers are mentioned, and that's the mother Miriam and the mother Musa's mother. And just briefly, what I gained from the mentioning of those particular mothers is that here was a mother who was given everything she needed, the mother of Miriam, the mother of Jesus, rather. We call him Isa, peace be upon him. But the mother of of Jesus, she dedicated what was in her womb, and we're taught in the book that everything she needed was there when Zechariah would come to try to see what she needed. Her Lord had already provided for us. And that's the instruction to us as mothers, that God has you, the Creator has you, and he will provide for you all that which you need. And then there's the mother of Musa, who had to trust Allah. And we know she had to trust Allah because she was told, put her son in the water. How many mothers you know going to let their son go in the water not knowing what's going to happen to that child? But she was assured by her Creator, Allah, that that child would be returned to her. It's because Allah knows the love a mother has for her child. So I learned from those kind of stories how to be more trusting of Allah, how to do the things that I needed to do, knowing that what I did not know, I would be given answers in some kind of way. And whatever mistakes that I made, that I was not to be defined by all of my mistakes, and that I could continue to learn. And I'm still learning, because as you know, I counsel people, I counsel mothers. I have a lot of people who call me sometimes that have issues that they're having and experiencing with their children in this culture that we're living in now. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of self-mutilation. There's a lot of self-harming. There's a lot of exposure to all kinds of things. But I believe this, that is not for us to become depressed about it. It is for us to still understand that there's hope for humanity. Why? Because it's created in the very nature of human beings. God says, I have created this human being in the best of modes. And he told the angels, bow down to Adam. Bow down to this human being, and then show the human being on the earth. And the angel said to the creator, how can anybody go right in all of that? And the creator says, I know what you know not. And I was thinking on that recently, and I said, what did they know? What did you know that they did not know, the angels did not? What do you know? And I kept on pondering. And then it came to me, and this is just me talking, and I have the right to come up with thoughts and ideas. And what came to me was, what is known is that the human being is created in that best of mode and has the capacity to self-correct, to change chaos into order, to grow from one stage to another. And so for us, the believer always understands that there is hope, that there is a better thing, that the believer will win through. That believer being those who follow their scripture is not just the Muslim, it's the believer will win through. So for me, I'm excited. I'm still excited about motherhood. I'm in a different stage of my life now. As you know, I'm here in Greensboro, North Carolina now, and it was an overnight situation that happened when I had to come and take care of my mother. I've been here now 2 years, and in a way, some parts of the experience and the journey is that I'm mothering my mother, you know, and I've had to take on several responsibilities that I did not, you know I was going to have to take on, but I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the journey. I'm grateful for the experience. I'm grateful for my children. I'm grateful to have been able to do what I have been able to do, and I did make sacrifices, and I don't regret those sacrifices. There are things I wished I had done differently. I'm trying to give my children's children information that would help them to be wonderful mothers and fathers and children, you know, still in the process of guiding, but also learning that it's not for me to manage. And for me, it's for me to model and for me to leave a legacy for my children's children and set clear goals and encourage them according to, you know, the injunctions that we're given to by God himself, Allah Ta'ala. So that's my brief and maybe not so brief experience with the beauty of this way of life and the beauty of mothering and motherhood and the invitation, you know, invite people to that which is going to encourage their growth and their connection to, you know, Creator and to say back to us, reverence your guardian Lord who created us from a single person and created like nature his mate. Then he scattered these seeds that became countless men and women. And make sure that we respect and regard Allah, which we ask for rights from, and then reverence those wombs, those that bore us, because God watches us and watches over us. So that's pretty much, you know, my experience in brief about, you know, motherhood and experiences that I've had.
Well, as a structure, let me just ask if anyone has a question. I'm bringing in Sister Mary at this point. Again, if you have any questions that you would like to ask Dr. Adrian Sabir or Sister Mary, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. So the remaining approximately 20 minutes left for the show, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to call in. And at this time, what I want to do is to just really thank both of you for giving your perspectives about Al-Islam as well as about being mothers and Dr. Adrian, as you so eloquently stated, that you've had trials and tribulations, and that's part of being a mother, regardless of one's religious practices. It just comes with the territory. In any relationship, there will be trials and tribulations, and you basically summarized how you used the Islamic principles and took them to heart, even as your children were in utero, to come up with a certain kind of structure and belief system that would guide them from infancy up until adulthood. And then, as any parent, as Sister Mary had also stated, that she did the best that she could, but as a parent, no one would get it right, even if you go to school and study it. It's like with anything that we do the best that we can. And she said in her raising her children, she imparted certain kinds of values within her children to make sure, even though they were not raised up in Islam, but just basic principles to transcend religions, to ensure that they were loving people and that they love each other. And they, to this day, have remembered those values and continue to live those principles and those virtues. So I think both of you have done an outstanding job, a commendable job, in being mothers.
Thank you.
And, yeah, I've done an outstanding job being mothers. And Dr. Adrian, you said you had two biological children and four children you adopted because there was a need for those children to have someone to be a mother, and you decided to accept that wonderful responsibility, and a lot of people would not have done that. So I commend you for doing that because that's a wonderful opportunity, but it's a responsibility, and you decided to do it. In addition to that, you have been mother to other children, a spiritual mother to other children. And I know Sissy Mary has and continues to do that as well because I'm one of her spiritual children. So tonight was my night to allow people to really hear the historical information about motherhood in terms of Islam. And that was my purpose of giving them that information, historical information. And then also to hear from both of you, because you are iconic within the community and you're just excellent role models, because there's so much negative information out there in the public regarding Islam and so much negative information out there in the public regarding women. So as I stated, my purpose is to show this designed to elevate and edify positive role models and concepts, and have people call in to ask questions, because what they see are 5 to 10 minutes of sound bites on the television about Islam. And so a lot of people may have stereotypes about what Islam involves, particularly as it involves women, because they see women covered. And then I saw a cartoon on Facebook. It was hilarious. There was a woman who was covered, and only her eyes were shown. And then there was a woman who was not covered, who was in a bikini. It was a cartoon. And so the woman who was in the bikini looked at the Muslim woman and felt pity. She said, wow, it's so unfortunate that men have oppressed her that she can't be able to expose her body. And then the Islamic woman looked at the woman who was in a bikini and said, wow, it's so unfortunate that men have oppressed her and that she only sees herself and values herself by not having on clothes. So these, you're
right.
Just talking about two different perspectives and how people
exactly.
view things. And
right.
I looked at that cartoon, I said it was very, very interesting because it's based on your perception and
yeah,
based on
is.
Your information
mm-hmm.
and also
and
tolerance and information.
Yeah, and
that's what the environment is presenting to the people. So.
Right. And I appreciate what you're bringing to the forefront, that there are stereotypes of us as women, Muslim women, as if, you know, we're not women who venture out. I've been a woman who has ventured out to learn all kinds of things. I homeschooled my children for 10 years. Few of them went into a public environment at a point, but mostly I brought them, they had experience in Islamic schools, and they also had experience of me teaching them, you know, for about 10 years. in a homeschool environment, and then I opened up some schools while I was in Georgia as well to teach not only them but other children because people heard about it. But I want us to heal ourselves because one thing you said, and I think is so important, especially for mothers, is sometimes we have all these diseases. That's why I'm trying to now here in my practice heal, get more information out about holistic health because a lot of time mothers bring so many things upon themselves that they begin to outpicture it in fibroids and breast cancer and uterine cancer and all these other kind of things. And it's because sometimes we're putting too much on ourselves that we put on ourselves not knowing that that's what we're doing. So I want us to love ourselves based on the definition that Allah gives us about creating us in perfect form and, you know, value our life and sit in the circles of good women and sit in the circles of great men and great women and good men and know that that exists and you don't have to do everything by yourself. You know,
I think that's key.
I'm glad Dr. Angel brought in about talking about help. You know, it would be wonderful if young women would get back to breastfeeding their children.
Right, exactly.
Realize all the vitamins and nourishment that the children need is in their, you know, is in their breast milk. And if they just learn to eat the right foods when they're caring the children, you know, I think we will have less diseases also.
Yeah, exactly.
The child will have exactly what they need because that's what the breasts are for.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. I know one of my close friend's daughter had a baby recently, and she was making attempts to encourage her to breastfeed, and she wasn't trying to hear it, you know. So her baby, fortunately, is a beautiful little boy. But what I stress upon young mothers is that you have certain antibodies within your breast milk that build up the child's immune system. And the cow's milk is not going to do that. Cow's milk will make children full of mucus, and you're giving milk from a foreign agent. The only milk that's comparable to the human milk is goat's milk. It has the same kind of molecular structure. Any other animal it does not have the same molecular structure. So you're feeding the milk of a cow that can weigh up to a ton to a little baby. So to me, that's interesting when you really understand that those are two different things from two different species. So there's no compatibility. And then mothers who end up feeding their babies milk from Similac and those other things that are not milk products at all, but chemicals. So babies end up having rashes and some other diseases that they need not have. At this point, Dr. Adrian, I know you mentioned about your practice and that you're no longer here in Georgia. So would you like to give people contact information on how they can contact you?
Yes, I still have my Georgia number, so that number is 404-734-3021, and they can also reach me through email, and that email address is A, and these are lowercase letters, A Sabir, which is spelled S-A-B as in boy, I-R, the number 7, @gmail.com. And so my prayer and is to be able to have healing circles for women here and, you know, workshops and speaking engagements that deal with, you know, holistic wellness on a physical, mental, spiritual level. And I only want to make one correction, not that it's technically that important, but just want to say that with the raising of my children or taking on my other children, I learned that I had never heard of a foster care system, and eventually, long story short, that my children were in that system or got put in that system after I had them, and the system sometimes keeps us from bringing our children into adoption, so I raised all of them, but in the end, only one, almost as an adult, that I actually officially adopt after having raised all of them.
Wow.
And it's interesting because that's another thing I want at some point to go back and revisit is how they not only imprison all of our boys, but how there are other ways of imprisoning our children. And African-American people need to become more vigilant when it comes to our children and see what is happening to our children wherever they are, mm-hmm. you know, because our grandmothers, you know, I don't know, our Sister Mary is older than us, but I'm sure she can bear me witness to this, that we didn't just let folk take our children, our babies, and raise mm-hmm. them. A grandmom or auntie or somebody took those babies. You know, mm-hmm. so we have to start looking ourselves as a people back at some things that we have allowed to happen.
I think that's very true. I think one of the things that may be different is that we were originally more agrarian. We were on farms, and mm-hmm. people could take on more children, whatever, because, one, it was practical because the more hands you had, the more you could work the farm. Secondly, you know, the expenses were different. Whereas now, even if people want to take on children, if they're living in an urban environment, unless they can get assistance, it becomes really challenging for people. Because I know there was a situation, I can't remember, a couple of years ago, someone was looking at the situation in terms of allowing a relative to come in, a child to come in, but the person was looking at her resources and trying to figure that out. So mm-hmm. I think what happens is, like, we've heard the cliche, it takes a village to raise a child. We have to look at some things, because society, things are different. You know, you can do more in an agrarian farm kind of environment mm-hmm. than you can in a city urban environment, because unless you adopt them or come to foster care, how are you going to feed them? A lot of people are asking these questions, you know, because mm-hmm. in order to claim them, they have to be a ward of the state. You know, you can't get food stamps for people who are just visiting. So mm-hmm. things, resources are being so stretched, and that's why in my classes when I teach at college, I tell people, you know, first learn who you are before you decide to parent, because it's more than a notion. And when these babies come, a lot of the babies now are being raised by grandmothers.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. the young girls, you know, don't really understand, like Sissy Mary talked about before, and you had mentioned it, you know, what motherhood is all about. They see these cute little babies that they think are dolls that are not mm-hmm. going to grow up. And they're still 15, 16. They want to have their lives. So they're still in the clubs partying. So the whole thing is that the grandmother ends up taking over the responsibility to raise these children. And some of my friends who are young that was not in the plan. They didn't have any intentions of raising these children. But if they didn't take those children, the child would be part of foster care. And one particular friend of mine has now, you know, within the past couple of years, she's decided to go into the system to kind of legally take over, because she wasn't getting any aid. The mother wasn't contributing anything. And she's on Social Security. So it's like she wanted to do it, but it wasn't possible for her to do it because she had limited means. So sometimes mm-hmm. I think people want to, but they're looking at their finances, and because we're no longer on a farm, which you can grow and it's not as costly, it's a different kind of dynamic. Living, and all of this, it's a different kind of dynamic now that people are looking at.
And I agree with that. And some of the other things I think we can kind of look at is multi-generational housing. And because there are situations now where we can do some things within the urban context, but like you said, we may have to look at it from just a different perspective in terms of how things are in this, you know, the way things are now. But it's, for me, it's no one set answer to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Even when Moses struck the staff upon the ground, seven springs came forth, and people, each tribe knew its place of watering. That lets and me know that there's different ways, and whatever way that we can do it where it works, and we can see more continuity to our communities, and we can see more healthy communities, healthy families, because mm-hmm. Many of our families are just so unhealthy in so many aspects of it. And mm-hmm. whatever you, with your program that you're doing, Sister Mary, what she's doing, what I'm doing, work at our places, and we can do what we can within the construct of you know, of those environments.
I think that's a very good idea. We have a caller on the line. And before we leave, too, Sister Mary, can give people your information about the detox very quickly because I need to bring in the caller. I know you're a detox specialist and you're a reflexologist and you're also a distributor of Peace Be Still.
Yes.
And you're also a distributor of Wonderful Wheat Germ or whatever. So give them your contact information.
Okay. I can be reached at 404-284-3757. And I do the detox and the reflexology by appointments. So just give me a call, and we'll set something up, and we'll take care of the feet.
Okay. Well, in the short time that we have left, we only have 5 minutes left. Hello, caller. Did you have a question? Hello? Okay. I guess the person decided not to share any information. Which is fine. In the last few minutes, Dr. Adrian, give us your information again in just a summary in about a minute and a half, and then Sister Mary, a summary in a minute and a half, and your contact information, and then we'll bid adieu to the listening audience.
Okay, my number again is area code 404-734-3021. My contact email address is aasabir, S-A-B as in boy, I-R, the number 7, at gmail.com. And I'd just like to tell mothers to be gentle with yourself. I say befriend Allah, be pleased with him, and have Allah, God, the Creator, pleased with you. If you can't do it with the name Allah or the God, don't do it. Acknowledge your, acknowledge and heal yourself, value your life, and move forward and sit in the circles of great people, and that's men and women, and just do the best that you can and reach out when you need help and know that there is guidance. You're not here left alone without guidance. God has given us clear signs and clear guidance.
Love that. Sister Mary? Parting words, contact information.
My number again is 404-284-3757. My email is Mary Salaam, S-A-L-A-A-M, 45, at gmail.com. And you can give me a call or email me. So my last words is love yourself. Learn to make yourself happy. And learn to have respect for yourself. If you love, like I said, and go within for that peace. Once you find peace within, you can be able to give it without.
I love that. So both of these ladies are phenomenal, phenomenal women. And please do give them a call. And for those of you who have been enlightened and who have been inspired and who have been motivated, please tell friends, family, co-workers, colleagues that this show is one of enlightenment and of empowerment of people around the world. And also encourage them to listen to the show, because at 9:01 it will become archived and you can direct them to the website, and they can download the show, or they can just listen to it on the website. And I am so thankful to Sister Mary Salaam, who is a mentor to me and a wonderful person. And as she stated, she is a foot detox specialist here in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, and is pulling out toxins through the feet. So please give her a call at 404-284-3757. She's also a certified Reiki master. And Dr. Adrian Sabir is a transpersonal psychologist and a healer, a certified Reiki master, inspirational speaker, motivator, and wellness therapist. Her number is her cell number is, repeat your number again.
Area code 404-734-3021.
And her website, I mean, her email is aasabir, S-A-B-I-R, 7, at gmail.com. I thank you so very much for being part of the listening audience. And until we meet again, our topic next week will be creative parenting. We will have Mrs. Mary Francis, and we will have Bethany Christel Arrington next week. So until we meet again, have a wonderful, productive week, and be blessed. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Peace and love to everybody.
Peace and love.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.